This is Bob Martin for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This opening music is courtesy of Joseph Martin, Professor of Music at the Lamont School of Music at Denver University. Welcome to the Poetry Corner. We'll begin today's program with a little piece written by Edward Lear in 1871, The Owl and the Pussycat, a fantasy love story. The owl and the pussycat went to sea in a beautiful pea-green boat. They took some honey and plenty of money wrapped up in a 5-pound note. The owl looked up to the stars above and sang to a small guitar. Oh, lovely pussy, oh, pussy, my love, what a beautiful pussy you are, you are, you are. What a beautiful pussy you are. Pussy said to the owl, you elegant fowl, how charmingly sweet you sing. Oh, let us be married, too long we have tarried, but what shall we do for a ring? So they sailed away for a year and a day to the land where the bong tree grows. And there in a wood a piggy-wig stood with a ring at the end of his nose, his nose, his nose, with a ring at the end of his nose. Dear pig, are you willing to sell for 1 shilling your ring? Said the piggy. I will. So they took it away and were married next day by the turkey who lives on the hill. They dined on mince and slices of quince, which they ate with a runcible spoon, and hand in hand on the edge of the sand, they danced by the light of the moon, the moon, the moon. They danced by the light of the moon. Another story from the Great Northwest during the Klondike Gold Rush, by Robert Service, The Shooting of Dan McGrew. A bunch of boys were whooping it up in the Malamute Saloon. The kid that handles the music box was hitting a jagtime tune. Back of the bar in a solo game sat Dangerous Dan McGrew, and watching his luck with his light of love, the lady that's known as Lou. When out of the night, which was 50 below, and into the din and the glare, there stumbled a miner fresh from the creeks, dog dirty and loaded for bear. He looked like a man with a foot in the grave and scarcely the strength of a louse. Yet he tilted a poke of dust from the bar, and he called for drinks for the house. There was none could place the stranger's face, though we searched ourselves for a clue. And we drank his health, and the last to drink was Dangerous Dan McGrew. There's men that somehow just grip your eyes and hold them hard like a spell. And such was he, and he looked to me like a man who had lived in hell. With a face most hair and the dreary stare of a dog whose day is done. And he watered the green stuff in his glass, and the drops fell one by one. Then I got to figuring who he was and wondering what he'd do. And I turned my head, and there watching him was the lady that's known as Lou. His eyes went rubbering round the room, and he seemed in a kind of daze, till at last the old piano fell in the way of his wandering gaze. The ragtime kid was having a drink. There was no one else on the stool. So the stranger stumbles across the room and flops down there like a fool. In a buckskin shirt that was glazed with dirt, he sat, and I saw him sway. Then he clutched the keys with a talon hands. My God, but that man could play. Were you ever out in the great alone when the moon was awful clear and the icy mountains hemmed you in with the silence you most could hear? With only the howl of a timber wolf and you camped there in the cold, a half-dead thing in the stark, dead world, clean mad for the muck called gold. While high overhead, green, yellow, and red, the north light swept in bars, then you've had a hunch what that music meant, hunger and night and the stars. And hunger, not of the belly kind that's banished with bacon and beans, but the gnawing hunger of lonely men for a home and all that it means. For a fireside far from the cares that are, 4 walls and a roof above, but oh, so cram full of cozy joy and crowned with a woman's love. A woman dearer than all the world, and true as heaven is true. God, how ghastly she looks through a rouge, the lady that's known as Lou. Then on a sudden the music changed, so soft that you scarce could hear. But you felt that your life had been looted clean of all that it once held dear. That someone had stolen the woman you loved, that her love was a devil's lie. That your guts were gone, and the best for you was to crawl away and die. 'Twas the crowning cry of a harsh despair, and it thrilled you through and through. "I'll guess I'll make it, a spread miserere," said dangerous Dan McGrew. The music almost died away, then it burst like a pent-up flood, and it seemed to say, "Repay, repay," and my eyes were blind with blood. The thought came back of an ancient wrong, and it stung like a frozen lash. And the lust awoke to kill, to kill. Then the music stopped with a crash. And the stranger turned, and his eyes, they burned in a most peculiar way. In a buckskin shirt that was glazed with dirt, he sat, and I saw him sway. Then his lips went in a kind of grin, and he spoke, and his voice was calm. And, "Boys," says he, "you don't know me, and none of you care a damn. But I want to state, and my words are straight, and I'll bet my poke they're true, that one of you is a hound of hell, and that one is Dan McGrew." Then I ducked my head, and the lights went out, and two guns blazed in the dark. And a woman screamed, and the lights went up, and two men lay stiff and stark. Pitched on his head and pumped full of lead was dangerous Dan McGrew, while the man from the creeks lay clutched in the breast of the lady that's known as Lou. These are the simple facts of the case, and I guess I ought to know. They say that the stranger was crazed with hooch, and I'm not denying it so. I'm not so wise as the lawyer guys, but strictly between us two, the lady that kissed him and pinched his poke was the lady that's known as Lou. One last little poem by Robert Service. This one not set in the Klondike. This one instead is set, well, you make up your own mind. It's entitled, "My Madonna." I hailed me a woman from the street, shameless, but oh, so fair. I bade her sit in the model's seat, and I painted her sitting there. I hid all trace of her heart unclean. I painted a babe at her breast. I painted her as she might have been if the worst had been the best. She laughed at my picture and went away. Then came, with a knowing nod, a connoisseur, and I heard him say, "'Tis Mary, the Mother of God!" So I painted a halo round her hair, and I sold her and took my fee. So she hangs in the church of St. Hilaire, where you and all may see. Following is a humorous little piece entitled "Some Little Bug." Not so humorous is the inspiration for the piece, which was the great flu epidemic of 1918, where hundreds of thousands of people perished. The author was Roy Atwell, perhaps better known as the voice of Doc of the Seven Dwarfs. In these days of indigestion, it is oftentimes a question as of what to eat and what to leave alone. For each microbe and bacillus has a different way to kill us, and in time they'll always claim us for their own. There are germs of every kind in every food that you may find in the market or upon the bill of fare. Drinking water is just as risky as this so-called deadly whiskey, and it's often a mistake to breathe the air. Some little bug is going to find you someday. Some little bug will creep behind you someday. Then he'll send for all his bug friends, and all your earthly trouble ends. Some little bug is going to find you someday. The inviting green cucumber gets almost everybody's number, while the green corn has a system of its own. Though a radish seems nutritious, its behavior is quite vicious, and a doctor will be coming to your home. Eating lobster, cooked or plain, is only flirting with ptomaine, while an oyster sometimes has a lot to say. But the clams we eat in chowder make the angels chant the louder, for they know that we'll be with them right away. Take a slice of nice fried onion, and you're fit for Dr. Munyon. Apple dumplings kill you quicker than a train. Chew a cheesy midnight rabbit, and a grave you'll soon inhabit. Ah, to eat it all is such a foolish game. Eating huckleberry pie is a pleasing way to die, while sauerkraut brings on softening of the brain. When you eat banana fritters, every undertaker titters, and the casket makers nearly go insane. Some little bug is going to find you someday. Some little bug will creep behind you someday. With a nervous little quiver, he'll give cirrhosis of the liver. Some little bug is going to find you someday. When cold storage vaults I visit, I can only say, what is it makes poor mortals fill their systems with such stuff? Now for breakfast, prunes are dandy, if a stomach pump is handy, and your doctor can be found quite soon enough. Eat a plate of fine pig's knuckles, and the headstone cutter chuckles, while the gravedigger makes a note upon his cuff. Eat that lovely red bologna, and you'll wear a wooden kimono as your relatives start scrapping about your stuff. Some little bug is going to find you someday. Some little bug will creep behind you someday. Eating juicy sliced pineapple makes the sexton dust the chapel. Some little bug is going to find you someday. All those crazy foods they mix will float us across the river Styx, or they'll start us climbing up the Milky Way. And the meals we eat in courses mean a hearse and two black horses. So before a meal, some always pray. Luscious grapes breed appendicitis, and the juice leads to gastritis, so there's only death to greet us either way. And fried liver's nice, but mind you, friends will soon ride slow behind you, and the papers then will have nice things to say. Some little bug is going to find you someday. Some little bug will creep behind you someday. Eat some sauce, they call it chili. On your breast, they'll place a lily. Some little bug is going to find you someday. Next follows two little poems by Eugene Field, first published in 1911. The first is an expression of loss, entitled Little Boy Blue. The little toy dog is covered with dust, but sturdy and staunch he stands. And the little toy soldier is red with rust, and his musket molds in his hands. Time was when the little toy dog was new, and the soldier was passing fair. And that was the time when our little boy blue kissed them and put them there. Now, don't you go till I come, he said, and don't you make any noise. So toddling off to his trundle bed, he dreamt of his pretty toys. And as he was dreaming, an angel song awakened our little boy blue. Oh, the years are many, the years are long, but the little toy friends are true. Aye, faithful to little boy blue they stand, each in the same old place, awaiting the touch of a little hand, the smile of a little face. And they wonder, as waiting these long years through, in the dust of that little chair, what has become of our little boy blue since he kissed them and put them there? The next field poem is of a lighter note. It is called The Duel. The gingham dog and the calico cat side by side on the table sat. 'Twas 12:30, and what do you think? Nor one to the other had slept a wink. The old Dutch clock and the Chinese plate appeared to know, as sure as fate, there was going to be a terrible spat. I wasn't there. I simply state what was told to me by the Chinese plate. The gingham dog went, pow-wow-wow! The calico cat replied, meow! And the air was littered an hour or so with bits of gingham and calico, while the old Dutch clock in the chimney place up with its hands before its face, for it always dreaded a family row. Never mind, I'm only telling you what the old Dutch clock declared is true. The Chinese plate looked very blue and wailed, "Oh dear, what shall we do?" But the gingham dog and the calico cat wallowed this way and tumbled that, employing every tooth and claw in the awfulest way you ever saw. And oh, how the gingham and calico flew! Don't fancy I exaggerate. I got my news from the Chinese plate. Next morning, where the two had sat, they found no trace of dog or cat. And some folks think unto this day that burglars stole the pair away. But the truth about the cat and pup is this: they ate each other up. Now what do you really think of that? The old Dutch clock, it told me so, and that is how I came to know. There's an interesting little story that precedes our next poem. Charles Dickens once had a pet raven which was able to speak a few phrases. The bird, which was named Gripped, died in 1841. This bird appears in Dickens' book Barnaby Rudge, which was published that same year. In the novel, someone asks, "What was that tapping?" Someone else answers, "'Tis someone knocking softly at the shutter." When the book appeared in the United States, it was reviewed by a young Edgar Allan Poe. He commented that he wished the bird had been brought to its full prophetic possibility. Later on, Poe wrote The Raven. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a mysterious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as if someone gently rapping at my chamber door. 'Tis some visitor, I muttered, tapping at my chamber door, only this, and nothing more. Ah, distinctly I remember, it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I had sought to borrow from my book surcease of sorrow for the last Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken and uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. Some late visitor entreating the entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more.' Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. 'Sir,' said I, 'or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is, I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door, darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into the darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortals ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was a whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard it tapping, something louder than before. Surely, said I, surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what the threat is, and the mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more. Open here I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with men of lord and lady perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my said fancy into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though the crest be short and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly grim and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on this night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Much I marvel this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing a bird above his chamber door, bird or beast upon the sculptured bust upon his chamber door, with such a name as Nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on that placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further than he uttered, not a feather then he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, nevermore. Startled by the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken, doubtless, said I, what it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master, whom unmerciful disaster followed fast, and followed faster, till his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore of never, nevermore. But the raven still beguiling all my fancy into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy into fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking, nevermore. Thus I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloated o'er. She shall press, ah, nevermore. Then, methought, the air grew denser, perfume from an unseen censer, swung by seraphim whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by these angels he hath sent thee, respite, respite, and nepenthe from the memories of Lenore. Quaff, quaff, this kind repenthe, and forget this lost Lenore, quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still of bird or devil, whether tempter set or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore. Desolate, yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still of bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell the soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden, if the clasp a tainted maiden, whom the angels named Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden, whom the angels named Lenore, quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked, upstarting, get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonium shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul has spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws a shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore. The next poem comes from the pen of James Whitcomb Riley. His poetry has been described as coming from the hearts and homes of the American people. Like the dreams of childhood, it will never grow old nor be forgotten. This piece is entitled Little Orphaned Annie. Little orphaned Annie's come to our house to stay and wash the cups and saucers up and brush the crumbs away and shoo the chickens off the porch and dust the hearth and sweep and make the fire and bake the bread and earn her board and keep. And all of the other children, when the supper things is done, we sit around the kitchen fire and has the most fun listening to the witch tales that Annie tells about. And the goblins will get you if you don't watch out. Once there was a little boy who wouldn't say his prayers. So when he went to bed at night away upstairs, his mammy heard him holler and his daddy heard him bawl. And when they turned the givers down, he wasn't there at all. And they seeked him in the rafter room and cubbyhole and press. They seeked him up the chimney flue and everywheres, I guess. But all they ever found was just his pants around about. And the goblins will get you if you don't watch out. And one time a little girl would always laugh and grin and make fun of everyone and all her blood and kin. And once when there was company and old folks was there, she mocked him and shocked him and said she didn't care. And this she kicked her heels and turned to run and hide. There was two great big black things a-standing by her side. And they snatched through the ceiling, for she knowed what she was about. And the goblins'll get you if you don't watch out. And little orphan Annie says when the blazes blue and the lamp wick sputters and the wind goes woo, and you hear the crickets quit and the moon is gray and the lightning bugs and dew is all squinched away, you'd better mind your parents and your teachers fond and dear and cherish them that loves you and dry an orphan's tear and help the poor and needy ones that clusters all about. Ere the goblins will get you if you don't watch out.
Writing in the early 1900s, Edgar Guest came to be known as the People's Poet because of the homey nature of his work. This piece is entitled, It Couldn't Be Done.
Somebody said that it couldn't be done, but he, with a chuckle, replied that maybe he couldn't, but he would be one who wouldn't say so till he tried. So he buckled right in with a trace of a grin on his face. If he worried, he hid it. He started to sing as he tackled a thing that couldn't be done. And he did it. Somebody scoffed. Oh, you'll never do that. Or at least no one ever has done it. But he took off his coat and he took off his hat. And the first thing you know, he'd begun it. With a lift of his chin and a bit of a grin without any doubting or quit it. He started to sing as he tackled the thing that couldn't be done, and he did it. There are thousands to tell you it cannot be done. There are thousands to prophesy failure. There are thousands to point out to you one by one the dangers that wait to assail you. But just buckle in with a bit of a grin. Just take off your coat and go to it. Just start to sing as you tackle the thing that cannot be done, and you'll do it.
This is Bob Martin for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And thank you for listening in to the Poetry Corner.